I think the first thing is, if somebody tells you you can do a real estate deal with no money, no credit, no experience, I don't think they're being honest with you. I don't. And, you know, I think for me, no money strategies are for people who have a lot of money, right? Here's the thing. If you want to do multifamily investing, there's going to be times where a check has to be written. Now, whether it's your check or somebody else's check, it's totally up to you. But this is not a poor man's sport. There are things that happen and there will necessitate an investment of capital.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to announce our amazing guest for the day, Jerome Myers. Jerome, thank you so much for being here.
So grateful to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So, everyone, Jerome Myers is the preeminent authority of dream realization. A believer that dreams can and should be real, Jerome left corporate America when he realized that his role offered financial gain, but little significance. He is the founder and head coach of Myers Methods and has been featured on Black Enterprise, Business Insider, and numerous podcasts. After building a highly profitable division of a Fortune 550 company, Jerome decided to leave the rat race to get away from what seemed to be the endless slew of layoffs. He has developed a system for exiting corporate America and creating a life of impact. Today, he and his company help other apex performers find their calling and live every day on purpose by harnessing the power of his model for a centered life, what he calls the red pill. Excited to hear about that, by the way. Jerome and his firms can guide any individual from a monotonous, uninspiring existence to a life of fulfillment and impact. Well, that is very exciting stuff, Jerome. Excited to hear about your story and what you're passionate about these days. So why don't you take us back in time and help us understand your exit from corporate America? How did you make that decision? Why did you want to leave in the first place, et cetera?
Oh my goodness. This story is so much fun to tell. It's not fun. It's actually makes my heart hurt, but I'll tell you, and hopefully listeners can get something out of it because I'm pretty sure folks can identify, especially as we're getting closer to the end of the year. And so on January 13th of 2015, I started a new job and it was the first of its kind and we've never done it before and we don't know how we're going to accomplish it. And I'm like, okay, like, what is it? He's like, we're going to take overhead power lines, put them underground. I was like, okay, this is awesome. So we embark on this journey. I'm employee number two in the division. By the end of the year, it's 175 employees. You talked about the $20 million in revenue we did. We had 30% profit margin. Everything's amazing, right?
Yeah.
I thought so. Then on December 24th at 4:55, I get a call. It's like, hey, man, what's up? Thinking I'm going to get all of these accolades and it's going to be an amazing, positive call. He said, Jerome, we've been going back and forth for a few weeks about this decision. And finally made up my mind, this is what we're going to do. He said, wait, I don't like where this is going. He's like, listen, hear me out. He said, we're going to lay off about half the team. I told you I don't want to do that. We've got to figure out another way to do it. He said, Jerome, I didn't call to negotiate with you, like telling you that this is a final decision. And now we got to figure out if you're going to implement or somebody else. And so I do a sigh. He's like, look, it's in your best interest. If you were playing kickball, you would want to pick your team. And I think it's in your best interest to pick your go-forward team because you've got a big challenge ahead of you next year. Got to do another $20 million and a few other things. And doing the reluctant nod. And he's like, well, look, man, it's 4:59. I'm going to spend the holidays with my family. I'll talk to you next year. And I like, wait. And he's like, no, Jerome, I'm done. And he hangs up the phone. And so at 5 o'clock, I'm staring at my phone and asking myself, hey, what happened? And, you know, I thought about it. You know, the folks that I reported to They came in once a quarter. I talked to them once a week, if that. Sometimes it was every other week. And so we built this huge business, but I still wasn't actually in control, right? And so this was my first time actually being the person who was responsible for deciding who stayed and who went. And I spent between Christmas and New Year's figuring out who was going to have a job and who were going to say, hey, you got to find another way to feed your family. And that was gut-wrenching for me. In fact, it felt like it kind of split me up the middle and threw all my insides out on the ground. And so the way that I got through it was I said, I'll never do this again, right? And I'll just operate at such a high level that people won't ever have to worry about this type of stuff. And so we put Humpty Dumpty back together again, and we go on another run. And now it's 2 days before Thanksgiving of 2016. And I'm calling the folks in and saying, hey, whatever you do, don't spend all of your money on Black Friday. I want to make sure that everything's good and you're going to be okay. And they saw what happened the year before, so they had an understanding of what I was talking about. And it was at that point that I said, you know what? I'm not ever going to be put in a position where somebody else made me do something I didn't want to do. So I decided that I was going to exit corporate America at that point. The thing that allowed me to put dissonance in between me or distance in between me and the decision was I said somebody else made me do it. But the reality was that nobody can make you do something you don't want to do. You always have a choice. And sometimes the choice is not to do it. And so when I realized, one, that I was just kind of a figurehead, I wasn't actually in control when the rubber met the road, and that I had to do things that I didn't want to do, I decided I don't want to be a part of that anymore. And so I left, and I didn't know really what I was going to do when I made that decision. And so I started seeking. And I remember when I was a sophomore in college, me and my buddy Duran were sitting on the stoop of our apartment complex. And like all good engineering students did, we did math in our free time. And the math went something like this. I'm paying $395. I have two roommates who are paying $395. You're downstairs. You're paying $395 with two roommates. This is probably happening 50 times in the complex. So the owner of this property is making $700,000 a year. We've never saw him. We've never talked to him. Right? And sure, it's top line revenue. He doesn't get to keep all of it, right? But that's a pretty big number for, especially for somebody who grew up the son of a soldier and a stay-at-home mom. So that's how I want to earn my living, right? I don't need $700,000. Maybe I just need $70,000. And the problem was I didn't have anybody who was investing in real estate or had a multi-million dollar apartment portfolio who could show me how to get into the business.
So Jerome, just like, you know, you obviously had like a wealth of business experience before, you know, having this light bulb moment about multifamily. What do you think it was about the multifamily, you know, that was intriguing to you specifically?
Just that he decoupled his time from the money.
Nice. Okay.
Right. And he had a manager in place who dealt with all the residents. They had, you know, maintenance staff to deal with the toilets and other things that broke along the way. And the best I could tell, he was getting great cash flow. And so for me, I was like, well, how can I get back to that? Because, you know, I've done the 60-hour weeks, I've done the 70-hour weeks. And if I'm going to go do something for myself, do I really want to do that? Or do I want to create a business that actually will allow me to have some form of a lifestyle that I really enjoy? And that was where I decided to go back to. Now, I wasn't any closer to being an apartment investor when I left corporate than when I was still in college, because I didn't have anybody in my network who bought apartment buildings. Because I think you need four things in order to get into it, right? Experience, deal flow, knowledge, and capital, right? I had more money. I had a credit score, but I didn't have access to banks who would lend me money at the level I needed to borrow in order to do these types of deals. Because, you know, the first deal that we went to take down was a little over $1 million. And so I had to build and overcome those four challenges that I believe every investor is working through in order to become a multifamily investor.
For sure. Yeah, that's awesome. And so how did you tackle those challenges?
YouTube University and podcasts, right? That's what everybody does. That's totally what your listeners are doing. And it was the stupidest way to do it, right? So here's the thing, right? It's inefficient and ineffective. And so those two things together for me mean stupid. I could have sped up my process dramatically by getting some formalized program to walk me through the steps on actually how to do that, right? So the four things, knowledge, deal flow, experience, and capital, need to be overcome in that order, right? You need the knowledge so that you know whether or not you're looking at a deal. There's a whole lot of things out there that are offered as deals, but they're just leads. Leads and deals have the same letters, but leads are things that will not make you any money. Deals are things that you can buy with a high degree of certainty that if you do things halfway well, you'll make money.
Right.
And so, but you need the knowledge in order to apply it against deal flow to know whether or not you actually have a deal. Once you have a deal, you need somebody with experience. And so for me, I went and found my first deal. I went to the bank, told them I wanted to buy it. They told me, no, you don't have the right experience. And so go find an experienced partner to do this deal with you. I had nothing. I had nobody. And so I was dead in the water. So I went and started fixing and flipping houses. When I came out of that, or while I was doing that, I had a guy come up to one of my properties and he had experience. And so eventually we ended up partnering on the deal after going through a lot of iterations. But the only way that I was going to be able to get that loan, which I think is the real capital, was if I had somebody on my team with experience. And so the experience brings the capital, right? And so that's why I think you have to go up the continuum. I think a lot of folks think, oh, well, I'm going to buy something, so I need to go get the money first. I don't think the money is the prerequisite, because if you can get the big lender, right, you get the big partner, the person who's bringing somewhere between 60 and 80% of the money, your debt source, in on the deal, then your equity is going to come too.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. And it, that does make a lot of sense, you know, that the capital, having respect for the debt providers and debt is so important in this space, not just from a deal making perspective, but also from like a deal, you know, crashing perspective. Yeah. So that makes sense. So you were fixing and flipping houses and then you met someone. I mean, I think that speaks so much to this, the importance of networking in this space. It's just your relationships are really what's going to be what helps drive you forward. And so, yeah, very important top point. Were you looking to do your first multifamily purchase with this partner that you met?
Yeah. So what happened was he came into one of the houses and I give him a tour because he was getting ready to do a flip down the street. And he was like, man, you guys are doing a great job here. And as he was on his way out, he stopped in the threshold and he's like, hey, do you think about that apartment building behind the Chimbo Mart? I was like, yeah, the 23 unit, right? He's like, yeah, I'm gonna make an offer on that later today. I said, well, I tried to buy that 4 or 5 months ago. Please don't leave me out of the deal. And he looked at me, he was kind of confused. He was like, yeah, what are you gonna bring to the table? I said, I don't know, we'll figure that out. Just don't leave me out of the deal. So he looked at me again and turned his head to the side. And he said, what are you going to bring to the table? I said, look, man, the banks told me they wouldn't give me the loan because I didn't have an experienced partner. You're an experienced partner that I've been looking for. We'll figure out what I bring to the table. Just don't leave me out of the deal because this is something I really want to do. And he looked at me one last time. He said, what are you going to bring to the table? I said, man, listen, I'm going to figure that part out. Just don't leave me out of the deal. And so frustrated, he shakes his head, walks down the steps through the grass, hops in his white Dodge Ram, and then he drives off. And in my mind, I'm still so giddy because I actually met somebody who owns apartments that is interested in the deal that I was interested in, that I thought, hey, this is Wednesday. He'll call me by Friday and let me know that we got the deal. We got the deal. Friday came and went. He didn't call. The weekend went through. He did not call. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, no phone call. And then I started thinking about it. I was like, oh man, well, maybe he just don't have my number. Surely he's going to call me. And what happened was he didn't get the deal. So he talked to a buddy of mine and he said, hey man, I want you to be a GC on this one. I'm trying to take it down. My first offer didn't get accepted. I'm going to go back with the team. And the guy came to me and he said, hey, you remember that deal we talked about in January? This other guy just brought it to me and said, hey, do you want to be the general contractor on it? And I told him I'm only comfortable doing it if you're a part of the deal. I said, man, that's honorable of you. I'm all the way in on it. And so now it's the three of us. We make the offer. It gets accepted. The broker for the deal says, well, I'm going to roll my commission in. So now it's the four of us. It's like, what's missing from this team? We need a property manager. And so our property manager throws some cash in and then they also manage the asset. And so now it's the five of us on this $1.3 million deal that is a total takedown. You know, they were running prostitutes out of it, drugs in a really, really nice area. I would call it a B plus, maybe an A minus area in Richmond, Virginia. And so this one was the eyesore. The coolest part about the experience was I ended up in the chair as asset manager for the deal. And with that came being quoted in the newspaper because every big brokerage house does a press release when somebody buys a new deal. And so we ended up in the Business Journal and so on and so forth. And so all of the lenders cruise those looking for people who are investors in the deals that are happening. And so now it went from me saying, hey, you want to fund my deal to, hey, Jerome, what else you got in the pipeline? Would you like to meet for lunch so you can see the products that we have to offer for your next deal? Do you know what you're going to do when you finish your construction? Have you figured out your refinance plan yet? And so everybody that turned me down, because there were at least 10 banks that I went to the first go around, was now calling me because we got a deal closed, right? And now I had the proverbial to go do an apartment.
Yeah, law of the first deal, right?
The law of the first deal. The second one comes faster. And for sure, that happened for me.
That's really awesome. Yeah, very exciting story. And thanks for breaking that down, because I think so much about what's important for people to understand about this business is that it's not necessarily a straight and narrow path, right? Like you have to kind of keep pushing and finding a way to make something happen and persevering until, you know, until you get that first deal, and then things will start to become, you know, they'll start to flow much faster. So that's really awesome. And let's just fast forward to, you know, I'm just curious. So like that was what year and where are you now with like the deals that you're doing?
Yeah. So we closed that one in November of 2017. Now we're working on a 120 unit development deal here in Greensboro, North Carolina.
New ground up construction?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
We stopped buying in Richmond and everything we buy now is in Greensboro. We've done a number of deals here in Greensboro and looking to exit a couple of the smaller deals so that we can roll into our opportunity zone project. So, you know, really excited about the future of multifamily and being able to afford quality housing to those folks who make the world go round. We really focus on workforce. So retail workers, police officers, firefighters, teachers, those folks who are in middle America and looking for a nice place to live, but don't want to play for all of the amenities that come with a lot of Class A properties.
For sure. Yeah. It's definitely an important service to be able to create like a, you know, a dignified place to live that's not at the price point of Class A housing. Means so much to our workforce. So Jerome, I know you have, you know, like I know you prefer joint ventures over syndications. And will you just speak to that a bit? Why is it that you prefer joint ventures over syndications? And maybe just for our listeners who aren't familiar, define or differentiate between the two.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite things to talk about, right? So when you, and some of you folks may have not flown in the past year and a half or so, but hopefully you still remember, right? So I'm going to get on a plane on Friday night to go to Vegas, and I'm going to walk through the terminal, and I'm going to get to the lady or the guy at the ticket counter. I'm handing my ticket. They're going to scan it. They're going to look at me, turn their head a little bit and say, okay, you're good to go. I'm going to go down the jet bridge. And when I get to the mouth of the plane or the door of the plane, there's going to be a steward or stewardess standing there. And they're going to wave at me and they're going to hand me a hand sanitizer because everybody's worried about the COVID virus right now. I'm going to look to the left. There's going to be two pilots there. They're going to ignore me. And then I'm going to go sit in my seat. Everybody that I talked about that I interacted with is getting paid to be on that plane. They're responsible for getting me there safely. That is what I would call a syndication. You got the general partners, everybody who's getting paid to be there and guide you there safely and make sure you get what you're supposed to. And then you have the limited partners, the people who paid to get on the plane or paid to get into the investment. They're going to go up in the air and then hopefully land safely in a new place. Limited partners are the folks that sit in the back of the plane, right? The general partners are the operators. That is different when you go into a joint venture. And the way I like to describe a joint venture is a fighter jet, right? You may have a few people, I call it a handful of people on the jet. in real life, it's probably only two, but let's expand it a little bit for the sake of this metaphor. And so everybody that is on a fighter jet has an active role. Nobody's just along for the ride. And so for me, I think, especially when folks are starting out, and you know, when I look at all of the educators in the space, everybody started the same way. They got a few buddies together. They formed a business. They used that business to go buy the real estate. They made money. They went out and told other people about their story. The people either became general partners with them and joined them on the venture, or they just gave them money. And that's when they started syndicating. And so for me, I think it's very important for folks who are starting out, if they want to be operators, to spend time doing joint ventures so that they have their skin in the game. They can be totally engaged. And if one day they want to move into a syndication model where they're using other people's money to buy deals, then they can do that. But I believe that the right way to do it, and I know a lot of folks say, hey, you can skip all those steps, is to have a track record that you have progression, right? I think it's really difficult for somebody to go from spending a couple of $100,000 on a single family home to go buy a $10 million asset. And so what I just like to see is people go buy something that's somewhere between $500,000 and $1.5 million, do their first deal with a few friends, folks who are going to extend grace to you when things go wrong, because I don't care how good you are, there's going to be something that messes up. And you work through that and then use that experience to go do bigger deals.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense for, you know, when the way you broke down the JV versus syndication. And it's, I think there's definitely a place for syndications for people who want to be passive investors. But for those people who want to be active investors, the JV model is a really attractive way to get your track record up and running. So it makes a lot of sense. So do you take on any passive investors these days in the deals that you're doing?
We have not taken any passive investors to date.
Okay, cool. So then and the equity is just provided by partners that you're working with?
That's it.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I love hearing the different ways that people are doing this business. So we have so much to talk about. There's a ton of other investing topics that I want to talk about, but I also really want to talk about your company, The Centered Life and The Red Pill, and like how you're helping people leave corporate America and what that process looks like. Cause I know that's something that's on a lot of people's minds.
Yeah. I think everybody wants to exit their matrix and they don't want to be told what to do, right? It's not a lot of fun. So our model for a centered life is called the Red Pill. And so if you see me in most places, you'll find me in a t-shirt that says I took the Red Pill. And while it's kind of a nod to the matrix, they never actually say the phrase in the movie. And so we've made it our own. And the whole concept here is change starts within. So you take the pill and you start with self-image, right? And self-image just means that you're able to keep promises to yourself. And if you can do that, then that grows your accountability. And it also allows you to come from a place of authenticity when the people around you are not being accountable to you, right? And so the next level after self-image is relationship. After relationship is career. Career to health, health to prosperity, prosperity significance. I said that fast, so I'm gonna go back down to the bottom, right? So self-image, keep promises to yourself. From there, you go to relationships. And we look at relationships really clearly and define them this way. Are they one way or are they mutually beneficial? If a relationship is not mutually beneficial, we try to reframe it so that it can be. If it can't be reframed that way, then we eliminate it. People are like, man, that sounds harsh. Here's the thing. You cannot be in a healthy relationship if there's not mutual benefit. It's impossible. And so what I find with the apex performers that I spend the most time with is that the majority of people that are in their world come to them to take things. They become source for other people, and the folks who are coming to them aren't bringing anything but their problems for them to solve. And so in order for them to continue to elevate and evolve, they need to be filled up because you can't pour from an empty cup. That's the thing that the folks on the airplane get right, right? You got to put your mask on first, then help others. So we want to get their mask on. And that's why we start with self-image. Then we go to relationships. From relationships, we go to work. So once you fix your relationships, the way that you show up is one way of confidence. You don't allow people to just kind of slide by and get over. And if you're running a business, it's really important that those relationships work that way. And so when you're there, You can be super authentic. That authenticity allows you to lead with your morals and values. Those morals and values attract people to you, which makes you a leader. That attraction then grows your capacity to influence, and that influence usually leads to more compensation and responsibility in the workplace. And you use that shovel to invest in things outside of work so that you can make your exit if you are reliant on your job to provide for your lifestyle. The next place that we go is to health. And you may say, well, why don't we go to health first? Here's the thing. Your self-image, your relationships, and your work create all the stress in your life. All the stress in your life comes from those three things. So we want to fix those things, reframe them so that you eliminate the self-destructive habits that you use to numb or edge out the pain, right? And so once you do that, then you can start doing the meditations, the exercise, the diet, all of the things that you need to do in order to be in peak physical condition and mental condition. From there, we go to prosperity. We get the health right before the prosperity, because if you get your prosperity before your health, you'll spend all of your money trying to get your health back. We don't want people to go backwards, right? And so prosperity is important because we want to create abundance. We want to create overflow. And out of that overflow, you can make your significance play. I've seen a lot of people who try to give when they're struggling on their own. And it's great that they have that heart, but I think it's extremely important that you give out of your overflow and your abundance instead of giving out of the stuff that you actually need to survive. And so six levels, again, self-image, relationship, work, health, prosperity, significance.
Awesome. Yeah, I really like how you broke that down and explained that. And so do you have like programs or coaching programs, or how are you helping people with this method?
Yeah, so we do some one-on-one coaching with a very, very small group of folks who are interested in completing a specific goal, right? I'm the how guy, right? So a lot of people know what they want to do. A small group of people know why they want to do that what. The hard part is the how. So the majority of people who have dreams that they want to make a reality struggle with support and strategy. And that's where we come into play to help people overcome the lack of support and strategy. One of my favorite movies is The Pursuit of Happiness. And when Will Smith is standing in a bathroom with his wife at the time, and he's brushing his teeth, and he says, "Hey, babe, I want to be a stockbroker." And she says, "Why don't you just be an astronaut?" Right? I think that is the reality for so many people who aspire to more, dream for more, yearn to go to the next level, but they just don't have the people around them who believe in the mission that they're about to embark on. And a lot of times it's for good reason, right? Because the person that they've been isn't the person who can actually accomplish the thing. But when we come into play, our goal is to help them get there as quickly as possible with as few bruises.
Well, I really love that. I think that's, you're filling such an important need in our society today. And thanks so much for explaining a bit about that. I want to circle back to real estate before we wrap up for the day. And, you know, in your experience so far as a real estate investor, what advice would you have about things to avoid for investors who are getting into the space?
I think the first thing is, if somebody tells you you can do a real estate deal with no money, no credit, no experience, I don't think they're being honest with you. I don't. And, you know, I think for me, no money strategies are for people who have a lot of money. Right. Here's the thing. If you want to do multifamily investing, there's going to be times where a check has to be written. Now, whether it's your check or somebody else's check, it's totally up to you. But this is not a poor man's sport. There are things that happen and there will necessitate an investment of capital. And so the quickest way for you to be bankrupt is to get in a deal that you cannot take care of if something goes wrong. And so I really encourage folks to be financially astute, do a great job of managing their personal finances. In fact, I encourage them to run it like a business so that when they get in a place where they're running their business, their real estate, whatever they choose to purchase within the continuum, that they have a place of authenticity where they can say they know how to manage money. Because it doesn't matter whether it's $100 or $100,000, your ability to be a great steward over those resources is the difference between you having a successful business plan and one that goes up in smoke.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very, very wise advice, like growing too quickly and doing things at a rate where you can't cover yourself is could potentially a recipe for disaster. Like, it, you know, you could potentially get away with it, but in the event that you can't, the consequences can be really high. So cool. Anything else you want to share with the listeners about what you've learned in real estate? What sort of mistakes you would encourage people to kind of avoid making? Anything along those lines?
I guess the follow on to that would be knowledge is the most important thing for everybody that's coming into the business. If you were going to go start a plumbing business, you wouldn't just go hang your sign out front and say, I'm running a plumbing business. You'd actually get some formal training to make sure that you were executing the craft or the trade properly. And I think it's no different for folks who want to get into the real estate business. Now, sure, you can go buy something, but that doesn't mean that you're going to buy something that's profitable. And the education is more of a life insurance policy or insurance policy than it is a guarantee that you're going to make money. But here's the thing. I've watched more people tell lies in Excel than I've ever read in Microsoft Word. Right? I can make a pro forma say whatever I wanted to say. If you tell me that your need is 15% IRR, I can make the pro forma give you a 15% IRR if that's what I wanted to say. Everything that you don't know about the assumptions that went into the model, because it's a guess. The only thing that you do know is that it's wrong. The question is it wrong on the low side or wrong on the high side? And once you see things that way and you come from a place where you can truly evaluate the investment that you're making, you put yourself in a position where if something goes wrong, you know which lever to pull, correct it. Or you know that you can't correct it and that investment may have to be written off as one that's a loser. I think the stories of multifamily investing are ones that are very rosy and everybody makes money every time and there's nothing that can go wrong. But I host a podcast called Multifamily Missteps, and I bring operators in from around the country who have all levels of experience from 3 doors to 3,000 doors. And the fact of the matter is there's things that go wrong every day because you're running a business with a bunch of people in it. And as soon as you add the people, there's flaws, and those flaws lead to mistakes. And whether it's loss of time or loss of money, you've got to cover those mistakes. And so get some formal education, get somebody that gives you a framework that takes you end to end so that you're able to actually evaluate the investment of the money that you've worked so hard to accumulate over the years.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And I mean, on one hand, there is so much information out there these days that's like free, which is a wonderful thing. But how do you actually make sure you are not making these mistakes, which are actually pretty, you know, it's pretty common, as you said. I mean, you have a whole podcast called Multifamily Missteps, which sounds amazing. So yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely, once people get more serious about the business, moving from the free education to some kind of like formal education is a really important step. Awesome. Well, Jerome, thank you so much for sharing so much of your story. It's really inspiring, and everything that you're doing, both in the real estate space and in just the personal development space, helping people live a life that is significant and meaningful to them, is so important. So thank you so much for being here. Would you please take a moment to share with the listeners how they can learn more about you, get in touch with you, et cetera?
Yeah. Hop over to jerome myers.co, and there you can find out about all the cool stuff we have going on. We've got a conference that's coming up in September and a bunch of other cool things that I really think will add some value. Oh, and there's a free 4-step guide for multifamily investing if you guys want something that's free.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. Well, I hope you all take some time to check Jerome out. Thank you again, Jerome, for coming on the show. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you all next time.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com. for tons of free educational content to further your success.